For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Dig your cleats in.
Line drive sailing away from Mullins.
Oh! An impossible catch. Oh, my goodness.
This is the Hot Corner with Patrick Harris and Joe Fisher.
What did I do wrong? What did I see wrong?
Covering all things baseball, the big leagues, and the MLB to Portland.
And there's another rocket. Mike Trout has tied it up with an absolute bomb to the top of the facade in left center field. Talk about Stanton territory. Trout hammers it, and it's 4-4, 473 feet.
Now, here are your hosts, Patrick Harris and Joe Fisher on 1080 The Fan.
Welcome into the Hot Corner for a must be a Tuesday, but maybe it's always a Tuesday around here. Patrick Harris, Joe Fisher with you.
Let's go. Let's get it.
Oh, hello. Hello.
I already failed my homework assignment of not looking up let's go in another language.
I already forgot about that.
Yeah, so. Exactly. I literally remembered it as I was saying. I was like, oh, yeah.
You could have said nothing. And that would have sufficed.
I'm trying to get more cultural in here, you know? I'm trying to respect some people in the... what's going on? What's happening over there?
The sound on this TV was on.
God. Get it together.
Whoa, I didn't do it.
I'm not doing my job. You're not doing your job.
Whoa,
what's happening? Heads are falling off.
Whoa. Whoever put the sound on this computer, that is not on me. If it was like every time I log in, there's a sound and I got to turn it off, I would be on top of that.
All right. Oh, let's do let's go in Hindi. Chaldar.
Chaldar.
Yeah, I'm probably saying that 100% incorrect, but Chaldar, let's go.
Where are we going?
You have a spicy lentil wrap with spicy tahini sauce over there. What kind of food is that technically? Is that Mediterranean?
I don't know. I was trying to tell you, lentils, they grow a ton of lentils in eastern Washington and western Idaho. And so I have been to the Lentil Fest in Pullman.
That
many,
sounds
many
like
times.
A terrible festival to
no,
go
it's
to.
A wonderful festival.
The Lentil Festival?
Yeah, a lot of people make like chili and some lentil soups, and then they got bands and beverages. And...
Hot take, lentil might be one of the most garbage foods out there.
Well, there's a lot of, and by a lot, I mean billions of people that eat lentils because it's really cheap.
Yeah, I get it.
It's like rice.
Yeah, but it is 2024. We don't have to eat lentils. This is my opinion about a lot of different foods that some people still choose to eat, is that, hey, it's 2024. We can get a little bit creative, and we can kind of just, you know, nix some stuff. And I feel like lentils, leave them in the Middle Ages.
I am completely fine with lentils. Plus, when you eat this wrap, it is delicious.
Is there any meat in there?
Like, there's none.
So veggie wrap, huh?
So the lentil is the protein source?
It is pure vegan. The lentil is the protein source.
You don't strike me as a vegan guy.
And the best part about it
are
is
you going vegan?
It helps you poop.
That's
no, I'm not going vegan, but I like good food. I don't care if it's vegan, veggie, meat, or whatever. I just like good food.
Well, staying regular is very helpful, too.
What was that diet that you went on a few years ago?
Whole 30.
Whole 30. Remember that.
Whole 30 is actually great.
Yeah.
Because it teaches you, so We don't continue Whole 30, but we still keep a lot of great things we learn from Whole 30. The biggest one being added sugar. Like, why does this box of mac and cheese have added sugar?
Why not? So it doesn't taste like cardboard.
Because the added sugars are what makes you die sooner.
Well, added sugars also. Thank you to Big Sugar lobbying us on the big old Capitol Hill. Like, yeah. They make sure that sugar's in everything.
And keep doing it, all right? I love sugar.
Big sugar, big tobacco, big avocado.
Ooh.
Big avocado? Isn't that just the cartels?
Well, yeah.
Yes.
Are cartels just running the avocado ring down there?
Could you not argue that Big Sugar is a cartel?
They do say that it has the same qualities, chemicals in your brain that like doing coke does, right?
Yeah, you get addicted in the same way you do to cocaine.
I would rather do cocaine than sugar all day. You can't snort sugar. I tried that with a pixie stick. It was terrible.
Well, again, you don't snort sugar. And I think that I would much rather... Yeah, just spend my money on sugar every day than on cocaine.
Maybe you haven't had hard good cocaine. Here. Maybe this is like a meatloaf conversation. Like, I don't really like meatloaf, and everybody says, well, you just haven't had good meatloaf. And I always say, well, you haven't had good dog ass either, so I don't know what to tell you.
Vancouver Ford Line says I am ignorant about Indian food. That is not true. I love me some butter chicken, all right? Butter chicken is fantastic.
That's like, I love Thai food. Pad Thai is amazing.
Hey, all right.
Way to expose your white
self. Indian food, all right? Does butter chicken fall into the category of Indian food?
In America, yes.
Yes, then I like Indian food.
But what about paneer cheese or bel puri, which is like a street food kind of thing?
I've never had either of those.
Well, those are great.
I mean, I like cheese.
Paneer cheese is great. It's like a tofu texture.
No, thanks.
But it's cheese.
You shouldn't have said tofu.
You guys don't like tofu?
No. Another one.
I'll do miso soup.
Leave it in the 80s, the 70s. Like, we don't need to eat tofu. What was the other one that you said?
Paneer.
No, paneer. And what else? What was
the bel puri?
Bel puri? Bel puri.
Yeah, you ever been to Bollywood theater on like Alberta or Hawthorne?
There's a Bollywood, restaurant over off of Division.
Oh, it's Division. Sorry, yeah. It's Division and Alberta.
It's right.
Great food.
It's walking distance to my girlfriend's house, and there's definitely some smells that waft from that place that are enticing. I would like to go there someday.
I've been there many, many times. It's wonderful. Indian food's fantastic. Plus curry. Plus you get a ton of curry.
Oh, dude, I had a fantastic curry a couple weeks ago from a farmhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dear God, it was, dude. I am fully curry converted. And okay, this is where the text line might be a little bit right. I never really cared for curry. I never really got its jam and why people loved it so much. That curry changed my opinion very much so.
Yeah, it's really funny. Like, the white people and other...
Dude, I grew up on hot dogs on white bread, all right?
Is that a sandwich?
Yeah, well, it could
I think
be.
Technically.
On white bread, yeah.
On a slice of white bread, yes.
I will expose this. Tomorrow, the Primetime Boys will be at 10 Barrel in the Pearl to launch the new sponsor for the Club Hour. I won't get into any more than that. But
are
I
you
happen,
allowed to say that?
I happen to work there, and there is a great Thai joint just next door, Khao San. And I remember asking a bunch of people that worked there when I first got hired. I was like, hey, how's the Thai joint? Because I really love Asian food. I'm more of a Viet Japanese guy, but I will get into some New York kitchen Chinese, actual Chinese, and some Korean food and et cetera, et cetera. But I was interested. I said, hey, how's the Thai food? And they said, oh, man, it's absolutely amazing. And I was like, oh, that's great, because then I can grab some food from there if I don't want to eat our food. And then I realized everyone only orders pad thai.
Yeah.
And do you know many places that make bad pad thai?
I mean, I've run into a couple, but it's few and far
between. Few and far between, right. So then I walked in and I was like, what should I get? And they were like, do you just want pad thai? And I was like, absolutely
that's
not.
That's racist.
Absolutely not.
That's ignorant.
I want to know what you're really good at. And they like lit up.
Aww.
They were so excited that I wanted real food.
There's another place off Division, and that's I'm trying to remember the name of it, but I had something like a Kalman guy.
Kalman guy.
Yeah, that was fire.
Kalman guy's great.
Give it to me with some spice as well.
Yeah, you get some Pad CU in your life, Pad Prick King. Like, there's a lot of great Thai food you
can
find.
Now I'm hungry. I'm about to text a girlfriend as far as what she's got whipping up for dinner after the show.
Get some paneer and bel puri from Bollywood.
I don't know if they're going to be open when I get over there, but it does have to happen. Listen, the lady friend has definitely opened my life and my eyes to a lot of different things that I would have never tried.
Can I ask a non-racist question?
Go for it.
Is she white?
No, she is not.
Boom.
She is Korean and Filipino.
Boom.
Yeah. And I thank her very much for it because, yeah, her palate is much, 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 much better than mine. And I thought I was a good cook. She is throwing down in the kitchen, and she makes it seem so easy. I am frantic in the kitchen when I am cooking stuff. It is stressful. I make it happen, but she just throws things together within like 20, 30 minutes. I'm like, you just made this? She's like, yeah, no problem. Yeah.
Yeah. What am I worried about?
I'm very much jealous, but thankful.
Oakley doakley. Well, we got a show for you tonight.
Now I'm hungry.
There's a lot to get into. Coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, we'll dive into maybe the wildest thought that baseball's had in a while, and that's really saying something. But we're going to sit here in the first hour and talk about adios, muchachos. Is the final death nail here? And after some things have gone on over the last few days, there's a lot to digest. There's a lot about the future, the current, what's going to go. We'll dive into that next, as there is one team in baseball that is in an absolute free fall, and we can't ignore it. We'll do that next. That's Joe Fisher. I'm Patrick Harris. That's Schultzy on the ones and twos, as he's always here. This is 10.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
80 the Fan. 7:15 here, Portland Sports Leader. Don't you forget it. We are live from the shadows of the historic Fremont Bridge. There's the Vancouver Ford text line, 503-864-6326. Your dollar goes further when you choose Vancouver Ford. They treat you right before, during, after the sale. They're coming in hot. Some places make superior pad Thai, but once again, like lentils, can often be boring. I have had ultra level pad Thai, though.
What is ultra level?
I don't know.
It's like the final boss of pad Thai.
You get to the final level of Zelda and they offer you pad Thai and you're like, oh, and I'm dead.
Yeah, we need to talk baseball because I am extremely hungry. I did not eat that much today, and now I'm just thinking of my girlfriend's cooking, and now I'm a little upset.
So you know, I am not going to eat all of this spicy lentil wrap. You're welcome to have half of it.
I am not. Expand your mind. I might try a bite.
Yeah, expand your mind. The sauce is good, too.
I will always try everything. But I am not afraid to tell someone, no, that is trash, and I will have no more.
Coming up at the 8 o'clock hour, we will introduce Joe to a spicy lentil wrap.
Is that TJ, Trader Joe's?
Trader Joe's. Mm-hmm. So it's like white people-ified.
Trader Joe's does not miss, all right?
It's white people-ified.
They usually are on point with their little deli foods.
So we'll get to Joe eats a spicy lentil wrap, and also a new projection of potential rule changes in baseball. And let's just remember, nobody hates baseball more than baseball. So we got a big 8 o'clock hour to get ahead to. And we'll see what this hour gets into, because we're going to open this up and we're going to let this breathe. And by mean breathe, I mean like really let it go and really see how far we can dive into what the hell is going on right now. And my friends, I present to you A team that was once 10 games ahead in their division is now 5 games back in their division. My friends, adios muchachos.
I just had to.
I ask this one simple question, my friends. Are the Seattle Mariners done?
Oh, dude. Cooked. Absolutely cooked. Like some pad thai.
Is this like a Donald Trump well-done steak right now?
This is, listen, when we got to the trade deadline, I remember us sitting here like, well, I think that the Mariners made the better moves.
Like Justin Turner, Rosarena, it looked like they won the trade deadline.
Jimmy Garcia.
Garcia, Julio's coming back.
Pretty sure Jimmy Garcia himself has given up 3 home runs to give up the lead in games, but I digress.
Yeah. So we sit here, and I ask you, everybody has bad slumps. You know, you win games, you lose games. It doesn't help that the Astros have been hot lately.
Death by a thousand cuts.
And you saw that Verlander is almost back.
I thought that he got announced that he is back and that he's slated to start here soon.
So my question to you, Joseph Fisher the Third, are the Mariners cooked?
Yes.
Is this over?
Yes. Put a fork in them, as they say. It's... The vibes, the momentum, like, you made those moves at the deadline, and again, it started okay for the first couple of days, but you're now 5 games back, like, in the blink of an eye, it's like, oh no, like, we're not just losing this division, we are slowly falling back and losing our grip on even competing for it anymore.
When your offense starts to be compared to the Chicago White Sox,
yeah,
we have issues.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how bad it is. I want to say that their batting average is what, like, at a solid, like, 212?
That would put it at worst ever. It's 215 right
215.
Now.
215. Excuse me.
They're on pace to maybe catch the worst ever, which I think is, like, the 67 Yankees or 68 Yankees at 214.
And that's batting average,
the night is
strikeout
still young.
Ratio. And that's the one thing that I think that's the most alarming is, like, we've sat here over the last few years and kind of looked at the home run surge, where there's a lot of people that want to talk about strikeouts aren't that big a deal. A strikeout and a single are about the same. Let me tell you what, if you're a Seattle Mariner, I would take a single over a strikeout 1,000% of the time.
Well, can I add that strikeouts are made up with power usually. So when you see strikeouts happening, good players are able to stay out there because they hit home runs, they hit doubles, they bring runs in, and the slugging percentage is usually a lot higher. I don't think anybody on the Mariners has over like a 450 slugging percentage at this point.
And I know there's some managerial comments. I want to hold off on those. We'll get to those in about 10, 15 minutes. But I don't understand. I know there was a lot of talk. Like, remember when T-Mobile was built? We like to coin the phrase, the house that Griffey built, you know, because the Mariners in the 90s were so great that they finally got a brand new stadium. And look, T-Mobile to this day is a top 5 stadium in baseball to visit. Wonderful, wonderful place to catch a game.
And it's held up since it got
built. As a longtime Indians fan, I'd go up there almost every single year and I'd walk around and go, man, this place is amazing. But can you really say, you know, like they say it about Citi Field in New York, like, can you really say that this stadium is why you don't hit well?
No, because you're batting 222 away from it.
Yeah, this is not about, like, yeah, it's hard to hit home runs in Seattle, but doubles, singles are still there for the taking.
Now, you can pull all the metrics you want, and I was looking at an article today about the pitchers and, like, some of their performance differentials, home versus away, and even those stats backed it up that they are better pitchers at home versus when they're on the road.
Sure, you got a little home field advantage.
Yeah, but they
sleep in your bed and the dimensions are nice.
And the article is trying to, you know, kind of make the case that it's because of the batter's eye and that this is it. And we already know it's not a hitter friendly park, but this whole last month or so, and now it's funny, we've gotten to the point where we're just like, oh my God, this team because now they're on a road trip and they still can't hit. And the argument about them starting a month ago was like, well, I don't know, the batter's eye, the way that the stadium is, like, maybe the case, but this team can't hit home or away.
What is it, do you think, Joe, that if a guy like Justin Turner or Rosarena walk in to the team, those are proven vets. I mean, Randy Arozarena is this side of Carlos Beltran, a postseason monster. And Justin Turner's been in the league for 15 years, whatever it is. How is it that these guys show up, have three games of good offense, and then all of a sudden are gone?
I don't know. It's very bizarre, like, how nobody on this team can hit. Like, not one. Like, Julio is the exception, and that is barely an exception at this point. And luckily, since the All-Star break and when he came back from the injury, he's been a little bit better. But, again, it is so bizarre watching this entire team and nobody hit outside of Victor Robles.
Which is insane.
I can't.
Extension, Victor Robles.
Yeah, he's actually, since the extension, not hitting. It's like crazy. Well, no, I take that back. He got a couple RBIs with one hit. But it is interesting to see people, like, not maybe wanting to blame the coaching as much. But I'm looking at this organizational approach, y'all. I mean, it's like a 27%+ strikeout rate. That is higher than any kind of team, even mediocre teams, should be. Bad teams don't have that. Like, it's just so bad. Game after game to come out looking at strike three, seeing strike one going down the middle without them swinging. I don't understand if it's just like a lack of confidence or if you're looking at the approach from the top down and nobody's getting right. I mean, it's too small of a sample size, but you do wonder why Ty France all of a sudden is hitting .270 and three bombs in Cincinnati and Justin Turner's coming in hitting .160 in Seattle. It's like, what, 3 weeks? But you still at least wonder.
And like I said, I want to hold off on managerial front office stuff because I want to get into that in about, you know, 8-10 minutes. And we will go there because that does need to be discussed. But we're also just talking about professionals here. People that, especially after the trade deadline, guys that make a career, make their living on hitting the baseball, that all of a sudden cannot hit the baseball. Like, is there something in the water? Is it elevation? I mean, is it the weather? Like, is Seattle so fun that they can't focus on baseball? I don't understand it. This is the stat that I will throw out. I heard this stat, and it's absolutely mind-blowing. And we can go on for eons and eons about this pitching staff. And this pitching staff is unequivocally the best in baseball. I will not hear an argument from anyone else.
I want to say their five starters all have a sub-4 ERA.
This starting pitching staff reminds me of the Braves in the 90s, except for 4 and 5 are as good as Maddox, Smoltz, and Glavin. And I'm not going there, but I'm saying statistically, that's how good it looks. Since the All-Star break, the Seattle Mariners have thrown 20 quality starts. If you don't know what a quality start is, that's 6 innings with 3 or less runs. In those 20 games, the Seattle Mariners are 9-11. 9-11.
That's disgusting.
And I would love to see how many of those guys threw into the seventh, because I'll bet you it's 10 of those 20. And you are 9-11.
Yeah.
I thought this bullpen was good. This bullpen is not good.
Well, you're not giving the bullpen any run support. Like, even if you are taking it into the late into the game with a lead, it's maybe a 1-2 run lead. Honestly, I feel like I have never seen anything like this. I mean, we're getting to that territory as far as, like, worst batting average, worst hitting team of all time. So, I mean, literally, I mean, I would have to go and look up historical seasons of teams with the worst batting performance, hitting performance of all time collectively. But again, just like looking at a team that is this dominant on one side of the game in pitching and then this poor on the batting hitting side, I have never seen a bigger disparity on a single team than this Mariners team this year.
It's like 100-win pitching staff and then 100-loss, like, group of hitters.
Yes.
It's so crazy.
You're literally worse at hitting than the White Sox at this point.
I have this stat from,
and they could be the worst team of all time.
I have this stat from Sunday. Okay. So that we don't count last night's absolute disaster against the Dodgers.
10 more strikeouts last night, by the way.
On June 18th, the Seattle Mariners had a 91.7% chance to make the playoffs.
Yep.
As of Sunday, 21.4.
Yeah.
That's a drop in 70%.
Do you know in that stretch they have the second worst record in all of Major League Baseball?
Behind the Chicago White Sox.
It's like, are you freaking kidding me?
I want to say that it was a graphic the other day, teams with the biggest jump in playoff odds and then biggest drop in playoff odds over whatever time frame. I don't know if it was June, May, what have you. I can find it, but Mariners were the number one team on that list as far as odds dropping over the length of time. I'll find it for you.
I think a big part of this is that players got to play, and players aren't playing right now. But this is where, like, look, longtime Cleveland guy, okay? Longtime Cleveland guy, current Cleveland guy, thank God. Longtime Cleveland guy. And I've watched Charlie Manuel, Mike Hargrove, Eric Wedge, Manny Acta, the beautiful and wonderful Hall of Famer Terry Francona, and now Stephen Vogt find a bunch of dudes that don't know how to play baseball and make them play baseball. So that's where the next question is. Where does management fall into this? And I'm not just saying the hitting coach, the offensive coordinator, the pitching coach, the manager. I'm talking front office and everything. And that's what really needs to be addressed with this team.
Funny enough, the three of those guys that you just mentioned ended up working for the Mariners, including Manny Acta right now. It's just crazy.
And that's where I want to go next, is where does this lie? Because I'm now starting to read conspiracy theories on how the rest of this season will go to make sure certain people stay where they are. We'll get to that next. There's so much more to dive into this insane collapse. And we'll stick with the Mariners, so don't go anywhere. This is the Hot Corner, and we'll send it over to Schultzy with sports. Friendly reminder, you can check us out on YouTube. We are on youtube.com/1080AM The Fan. You can catch all shows here on The Fan on YouTube. And also, if you miss any of it, you can catch that on the Odyssey app. The Vancouver Ford text line, 503-864-6326. Coming from the 503, the Mariners have been a wreck since last season, ditching Teoscar and Eugenio. I almost said Eugenio. And that's how distant Eugenio feels right now.
Eugenio!
Were ridiculous moves. The idea that this lineup as constructed could compete long-term is laughable, as they can't hit most pitchers. Cal and JP and the entire starting rotation deserves much better. That's our friend JR. And that's the truth. I mean, you look around, and JP's been hurt. So that's a little tough. And I would argue that JP, in a sense, was the MVP of the team, of the hitting last year. You know, Julio and Cal, like, Cal had big moments with his home runs, and Julio being the prospect and future that he is speaks for themselves. But the team went as JP went. And I think they are missing that a little bit. But you can't tell me that a career 260 hitter is the catalyst that's really preventing you from being great. And also coming in, Seattle's coaching stinks. How do you coach collapse? But that's where I want to come in right now, is like that's the conversation, is Scott Servais. I think there's a lot to really enjoy about Scott Servais. What I like about him is he's a little old school meets new school. He doesn't get rattled. He's the kind of guy that's like, look, we had a bad night. We're going to be fine. Look at the guys on the list. We're going to be okay. We're going to go through. But then you start having press conferences when you lose to the Dodgers in a fashion like last night, where it's like, well, we got to score runs. And it's like, yeah, Scott, thanks. How are we going to do that? How are we going to do that? It's now at a point where it's like, if I spend too much time at the bar, my wife's like, you got to spend less time at the bar. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. And then I have to think to myself, well, how am I going to do that? I like going to the bar. I have no answer. And that's kind of where Scott Servais is right now. As a manager, you got to kind of figure it out. I was watching Cleveland, New York today. I believe that game is still tied 3-3. And I was talking with a buddy, and we're big fantasy, and he has Cade Smith and Hunter Gaddis, who have been great save hold guys for Cleveland. But Stephen Vogt is now bringing them in high leverage situations and not in fantasy situations, because Stephen Vogt is now managing for the playoffs. He is now saying, I am not going to put my starter in for 2-3 more outs. I'm going to pull him early, and I'm going to let my bullpen do the job. Like, he is making moves. He is deciding. They trade for Lane Thomas. He's not been very good, so he doesn't play. And I haven't really seen anything from Scott Servais to say, how do we move this around? Like, maybe Julio bats leadoff. Maybe try batting Julio in sixth. Maybe get Justin Turner in the two hole or try him in the eight. I don't see Servais doing anything to try and shake things up. Well, we're going to have Garver behind the plate and Raleigh DH? That's not it. When does this truly, truly fall on Servais? And I'll also ask the other question, is this a Servais problem?
It's kind of a catch-22, because at what point can you belabor the point, like, guys, we got to hit. Guys, we got to hit. Guys, we need to hit.
Yeah, you're like looking at him like,
What else do I need to say?
Yeah, like, yeah. How do I motivate you?
Yeah, I can't go out there and do it, for God's sakes, but he has been there. I mean, God, what are we going on?
This is 10 season.
Years? Yeah, I was going to say, like, I feel that this is going to be his last season. Like, this is kind of going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back.
But what's the new voice that changes things? Is to counter. I'm with you.
Preaching situational hitting.
But how do you preach that to guys that can't hit a ball in any situation?
Well, they're not being preached the right thing. I'm telling you, it's Servais. It's the fired Brant Brown. I just heard Jeff Passan in an interview with the Seattle Sports Station today talking about how his sources, hitters on the Mariners anonymously, are coming to him and saying that even since Brant Brown was fired, the message from hitting coaches or whoever's kind of playing hitting coach that day is inconsistent. And when players are going through struggles, you need a consistent voice at the top. Scott Servais isn't a hitting coach. Manny Act is not a hitting coach. They didn't even have a bench coach for like 4 years because the Mariners have been running their coaching staff, in my opinion, in a super weird, just like general assignment to this guy kind of way. I don't like it. That approach. You see Justin Turner come in. What does he do? He takes his two-strike pitch on the outside, corner of the zone, and he just puts the ball on it and he hits it into right field. Tell me any other Mariner besides Julio and Cal that have been able to do that this year. I'm still looking at the stats. I'm super interested to see if 1 through 9 the Mariners are hitting to the middle of the park and hitting away. I would bet, though, that they are not, and that is because they are missing those opportunities with strikes down the middle on that fastball coming down strike one, and then when you're striking out instead of just trying to put the bat on the ball, they're doing too much.
I'm going to push this to another level. Coming in on the YouTube chat here, DePoto is probably stressing because they're just under the 54% win markage, and that's a really funny statement. And I laugh, and I'm really glad I said it because I got a chuckle out of both of you. But when does this leave Scott Servais? When does this become a DePoto situation? Because I'm ready to put a tinfoil cap on. I read something the other day on Reddit, so take it for what it's worth. But somebody mentioned something that was fascinating to me. There was talk during Pittsburgh that when they get home after their road series, that Servais is going to get fired. However, Servais is going to make it till the end of the year, because if he gets fired now and they don't make the playoffs, then that looks bad on DePoto.
So
are we now sitting here in a position to save DePoto's job? Like, when does that question really hang?
Also, like, what does firing Scott Servais do? Right.
Well,
now.
Right, because you're going to promote somebody from the bench.
No, yes, you kill it all and either bring in new coaches or somebody from the minors.
Can you bring in a new coach on August
20th?
Yes,
you get rid of seven guys.
Who, Joe Madden?
Go call Ned Yost. I don't care. Joe Madden's out there? Sure. Anybody.
Joe Girardi?
Joey Cora, former Mariners second baseman, interviewed for like 20 managerial jobs, never got one.
I love Joey Cora.
There's a ton of names out there.
Is Grady Sizemore available?
Hey, technically he is.
Yeah, getting rid of Servais, like, let him finish out the season, see if somehow, some way you guys can turn it around. I mean, we've got, what, 30, 35 games left, you're 5 games back, anything can happen. But we have such a large sample size at this point that would lead you to believe that something is not going to happen. And again, like, firing a manager this late in the season, like, you are literally giving up on the season.
Without a doubt.
And the whole, like, conspiracy theory, like, I get what you're saying. Like, then at the last month and a half, if nothing changes, then it looks bad on DePoto. It's like, all right, we got rid of the manager, and these guys still suck under this manager, so maybe it's just this roster and this team sucks. The one thing going for DePoto is like, yeah, but do you see that pitching staff?
And the farm system.
And the farm system.
You see who did that?
And the trade deadline.
Exactly. Well, and to your point, Patrick, actually, about the trade deadline, I personally thought Jerry DePoto was trying to save his job at that point and only made the trades for Rosarena, and Turner and Garcia because he needed to save his job. Those moves could have been made in the offseason. No, instead he went with Luis Urias and a couple other of, you know, just like kind of...
Polanco.
Thank you, yeah. See if
we've had our eye on him for years.
Well, and you know what? Polanco, to his credit, has kind of turned it on here in the last half of the season. I like it. But it's just the point is that DePoto is bringing in these guys over and over again. Mediocre replacements that he hoped will, you know, play up to a performance from two seasons ago. And then just... basically waiting until the last moment where his job is on the line for some reason, because I don't know, it's like his way is the best, and since it didn't work in March, it's going to work through June and July, but then all of a sudden, no, when his ass is against the wall, then he only does something. I don't know.
I guess my thought is, you know, Stanton was always the scapegoat. Like, it's always easy to look at your owner and say, you know, this owner sucks. You know, I deal with that in Cleveland. Dolan is awful. But the front office is fantastic. And that's when the real question lies is when does... Jordan, I know you know this. But Joe, do you know who the GM of the Seattle Mariners is?
Ah. I mean, it's not Jerry DePoto the way that you're saying it.
No, it's not. He's the president of baseball operations.
No, there's a fall guy in the GM's spot.
There's a fall guy there.
Name's Justin Hollander.
So the real question is, you can have bad owners... Maybe Service isn't a bad manager. Maybe the team is just constructed poorly.
Who does Jerry DePoto have naked pictures of? That's my question at this point.
Probably Stanton.
Yeah.
Is this a Jody Allen situation?
Yeah.
Hot tubs and everything.
I just, at this point, if you are DePoto and, the GM that I had no idea what his name was.
I didn't either.
It's okay, Justin Hollander, but he's, no. Whenever there's a trade, everybody refers to DePoto, not Hollander. So,
I mean, as I said, it's like, hey, look at all these arms we have. Well, maybe it's time you look at maybe moving a couple so that way you can get some guys that can actually hit.
And that's where I want to get to next. Like, before we completely send off this team, which we might be doing this week, and completely not mentioning this team until we get to the offseason of what the future looks like, let's take a peek. What, if anything, can DePoto do to salvage his job and salvage this team? Because there is talent. There is a ton of talent, but it is clearly not performing.
Sorry, I just saw this comment on the YouTube chat. So when you fire Service and they're still bad at hitting, then what do you do? They're the worst at hitting right now. Like, how
you can't get worse.
I was going to say, how much worse is it going to get? Like, again, let him ride out the season, see if he can fix this and turn it around, get a playoff berth, whether it's the AL West or wild card. But again, you are literally statistically the worst in the league and are on track for the worst ever.
Also,
can't get worse than that.
Also, if you fire Service, who is available? Let's get to that next. There's still some more Mariner fallout. Is this the last time we talk about the Mariners for the rest of the 2024 season? This is the Hot Corner, Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. Does this get you hot?
Fuego. Calor.
If the whole place is dark and this comes on and people are cheering, the closer comes out, you feeling good?
I mean, it's not as cool as like the D-Generation X music.
Are you ready?
Dum, dum.
I do think it's kind of cool.
You ready to bow down to the masters?
Break it down. I do think it's kind of cool. I love the idea. I mean, we grew up in the 90s. We grew up with Sandman and Hell's Bells. And in the second segment, I love to play Sugar Diaz's walk-up music. I mean, like, the trumpet is just epic. But I was watching a Brewers game the other day, and that song was playing in the middle of, like, the sixth inning.
The Diaz walk-up song?
Yeah, just in the stadium. And it's kind of like, oh, man, dude, they just straight stole that from that guy. If anybody ever stole Sandman and played it in the sixth inning, you'd get run out of town.
I want to say that I heard that song on, like, a bumper on... Maybe it was during, like, the Olympics basketball or something like that.
The Diaz song or the Suarez song?
The Diaz song. Yeah, it was during something where I was like, oh, hey, it's the Diaz song. But they were like using it in the production of some sporting event somewhere.
Should we get to a point, at least in baseball, like if the Olympics want to do it, then okay, yeah, you like stole it because it means a big thing. But in baseball, if a guy has an iconic song, we got to like let them have it, right? You can't be playing that in other stadiums.
Yeah, I get what you mean. In a sense, like I have, it's like
Miami's 40 games out of the playoffs and they're playing Enter Sandman in the fourth inning. Like,
it's like MySpace. Like, dude, I had that song on my profile first.
Before
you can't take it.
You can't take it.
You're taking my song, dude. He's in my top eight.
Boy, for a game with a ton of unwritten rules and most of them are really stupid, if you're a closer and you have a theme, you shouldn't be able to touch it.
Yeah, but I do.
It would be really cool if Suarez walked out to Hell's Bells, though. Like if the whole place went dark and Hell's Bells hit.
No.
He's not established yet.
You can't do it. It's like stealing somebody else's catchphrase. You just can't do it.
If Emmanuel Clase gets signed by the San Diego Padres next year and they're making a World Series run and it's Game 7 of the NLCS, and he's about to come in the whole place goes dark. Can you play Hell's Bells?
I would give him a pass once.
The best closer in baseball?
If it was a very, like...
Just one time. Yeah. Game 7 of the NLCS.
God, even then, I'm like... Oh, man, that's... Maybe if it's like a Game 3 or
what
something.
What if it's Cleveland and it's Game 7 of the ALCS against the Yankees?
I mean, what if I came in on Cleveland did a home run call? Back, bong. Like, you can't steal other people's stuff.
Yeah, I think because he is a Padre and Trevor Hoffman was also a Padre. And
that's why I said Padres, yeah. Because it's
again the
Hoffman.
Connection there. That's why I'd give him a pass like once.
I don't think you can do Sandman in New York because no one's Mo.
No one's Mo.
And no one's really Hoffman, but Hoffman's not even Mo.
Well, he is a Hall of Famer.
Hoffman was a different pitcher than Mo. So.
But he's not Mo.
No.
Yeah. Again,
Unanimous.
I'll give you one. I'll give you one, Suarez, and that's it. So use it wisely.
You better use it wisely.
But if it's like
a P-wing in Mario.
But dude, if it's like a game seven and he like blows the save, you're like, well, you kind of
shouldn't have played
up,
Hell's Bells.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah. All right, coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, we got a lot to get to, including potentially bad rules in baseball. Plus, Joe eats a spicy lentil wrap for the first time. But I want to finish
just
up this.
Bite.
I want to finish up this Mariner conversation, as this might be the last time we talk about this team until the end of the season. The thought is, right, you have a starting five rotation that might be the greatest five I've ever seen in my entire life. You've got Emerson Hancock waiting in the distance, potentially six guys that can throw. Is the idea moving forward still kind of what the thought was at the beginning of the season of move Miller or Wu? Or is it time to look at hit your post to Gilbert or Kirby and move the other guy? Because Castillo's going to be really hard to move because of that contract. Even though I think he gets a bad rep. I think he gets a bad rap because Gilbert and Kirby have been so good. But I think Castillo's worth the money he's making. But you can't really move him because of that contract. Is it worth more moving a Miller Wu? Or is it worth choosing a Gilbert Kirby and moving the other guy?
I don't have the ages of all these guys up front. But I mean,
they're all under 26.
Yeah, I mean...
And my, with years of control.
My personal instinct is to let Kirby go. If I were to...
And why is that?
I'd rather have Gilbert. I'd rather have Castillo. I'd rather have Wu, who I think is younger. I'd rather have Miller, who I think is younger.
And then you have to think that Kirby demands more than Miller Wu.
Yes. Yes, that too. I think that if he were to be on the table for teams to trade for him, that despite, you know, he drives me nuts because of the whole pitch count and him not going as deep into games as I would like. But again, he is still a great pitcher. And so I think that he has a track record that's been established long enough now that where he would demand more on the trade market. So I'd go away from Kirby of all those guys.
So personally. But you like the idea of trading one of the studs,
yes,
and keeping the kids.
Yes. Because you need studs to hit. And you don't have anybody. So, like, you need, like...
More return.
Yes, 100%.
I don't mean to come in pessimistically, but I hate this idea completely. They didn't spend the money when they had the opportunity last year. And I don't know if, you know, DePoto or whoever the GM is going to have to go to the owner asking, you know, hat in hand again for more money this offseason.
Yeah, looking at guys, I mean, obviously they're out on Soto, but Christian Walker exactly. would be a great sign.
There's
Bellinger could be available.
Anthony Santander.
Santander. Matt Chapman could opt out, although I don't think he will.
There's available guys, I think.
Teoscar.
Yeah, if you're willing to spend $20 million in a season for one single player, you can go grab them. The problem is that they just don't want to. So what? You're forced to trade your really talented pitching because your owner doesn't want to spend money? I mean, I guess in a perfect world, like dealing with, you know, what you're given, that's what they would have to do. But I don't see it. I don't think they should do that. They've got Wu and Miller. Trade one of those guys. Package them with Hancock and two of your top prospects in Ford and Colt Emerson. See what you can get out on the open market in, you know, like a controllable, really great young player like a Ryan McMahon type, but maybe even a couple of years younger than that. There is a star to be had for what the Mariners have, but they also have a ton of money. They don't have to give up any of their top-tier guys.
Well, let me counter this for you, Schultzy, on that. I think I tend to agree with you. I like, pitching will always win. So I really would love to see this starting five for the next 3-4 years. I think that'd be so rad. But I will counter with this for funsies, just to talk about. If you could package Ford and Kirby, it's probably too much, but let's just say hypothetical.
Yeah.
If you could package them for a Jackson Holiday.
That's not happening.
I wouldn't do it. It's unproven. I'm not going to take a flyer on a 20-year-old. I mean, if you're talking about trading my organization's top starting pitcher.
I mean it more situationally.
Have you been watching him not, since he got caught?
I get that.
I mean it more situationally. Not Jackson himself.
Okay.
But like a Churio or a Merrill.
I love Churio
or,
too.
Or, you know, or somebody like that. You know, obviously, Bobby's not on the table. But like somebody that is a kid that has serious flashes. Is it worth to give one of those starters and a top minor league guy for a Jackson Churio or a Jackson Holiday or a... What's Merrill's first name? Please tell me it's Jackson.
Jackson Merrill.
It might be Jackson Merrill.
For one of the Jacksons, the Jackson trio, is that worth it?
I mean, if you're adding like a Ryan Mountcastle who's going to give you 15 to 25 homers in a season.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
I think if you can get a couple other pieces.
I need a Mountcastle.
Yeah. With, see, if you're just asking, you know, 3-for-1, hell no. But if you're trying to throw in proven major league talent along with the top prospect in all of baseball type of a trade here, yeah, that starts to tickle my skirt alert. It like
if Eovaldi, Scherzer, and DeGrom are done, can you send, you know, a Kirby and a Dominguez or whatever it is to Texas for a Wyatt Langford or an Evan Carter?
I don't know. I think
is that the swing you got to take, the SWING?
I mean, again, I just think that you have such a disparity in pitching and hitting that you can afford to give up one of those.
That's kind of what I'm asking.
Yes. So, like, why not make that move? Now, it's a matter of, like, those names you're throwing out, I don't know if any of those.
Totally. I don't know if they're available.
It's tough, but.
This is hypothetical.
Yeah, I get it. And it's just, you know, if you were to play the trade machine all night long, could you realistically make that work? And, like, where you, if we're playing both sides of the franchise, one team and the other, are you able to find something fair like that? But is there a quote-unquote star or batter that is the quality of a George Kirby that a team is willing to give up?
And that was
I'm just trying to think off the top of
my head.
That
was the big question at the trade deadline. Like, Randy Arozarena was the best bat you can get, and he was batting .247.
But again, is there someone even better than that that you can give up? Again, one of these pitchers that you have.
Yeah, I don't know. Mike Trout, is he available?
And don't do that.
And honestly,
I can't believe I'm saying that, but don't do that.
Take a flyer on him. Give up a mid-level prospect for him. I don't know what the Angels are going to be able to get for him. You can't ask for a top prospect from a team for a $30-plus million injured, you know, like 33-year-old former superstar.
Last place in the West. Los Angeles Angels.
There you go. And they won't ever trade him to the Mariners anyways.
All right, let's get out of here. Let's get to something more depressing. Major League Baseball has a thought about a new rule change. Plus, Joe will eat a spicy lentil wrap for the first time.
I'm taking a bite.
And fair or foul at the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. Loaded second hour. Don't go anywhere. Hot Corner, Tanae the Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.